I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about why it's important to improve graduation rates and how to go about it. This show is part of American Graduate, an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting aimed at improving graduation rates and setting young people on the path to success by using the power of public media. My guest today will be John Bridgeland, Chief Executive Officer of Civic Enterprises in Washington, D.C., and co-author of the latest Grad Nation report. Please join this important conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about graduation rates, about why they are important, and what we can do to hit an ambitious goal of achieving 90% high school graduation rates by the year 2020 nationally. If you'd like to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guest today is John Bridgeland, who is the co-author of the new Grad Nation report. He is also the chief executive officer of Civic Enterprises in Washington, D.C. John, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you, John.
It's good to have you here. We probably ought to talk. This is part of an ongoing series. We've done several American Graduate programs here for No Limits with the boilerplate language that says it's an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'd like to talk a little bit about the genesis of the American Graduate Initiative, and I think that probably will lead us into a discussion of why this is so important.
Well, John, it's interesting. You know, America can't solve problems it doesn't understand, and the power of public media to actually go deep on an issue like the high school dropout problem has really had transformative effects, playing roles in local communities all across the United States and lifting up the voice of young people who made this extraordinary decision to leave school, why they left, who they are, where they went to school, and their perspectives on what could be done about it has made a big, big difference. And in fact, in 2006, we wrote a report called The Silent Epidemic, generated a Time cover story, Dropout Nation, because it shared the perspectives of young people who had dropped out. And interestingly, Shelbyville High School in Indiana was the cover story.
Yeah, about 25 miles south and east of where
exactly.
We're talking right now.
And since that time, I've been to Shelbyville many times, meeting with David Adams and seeing that extraordinary story of how the perspectives of young people informed reform of a school and a change in culture that now ensures more students are on track to graduate.
So some of it, could you talk about the genesis of how that original effort, that original research piece, the Dropout Nation that produced the Time cover story, how you became interested in that subject in the first place?
Well, I saw we did focus groups with young people across the country, and I met a young girl in Philadelphia who wanted to be an astrophysicist when she started off in life, and 30 minutes later in the conversation learned that she literally was a prostitute on the streets of Philadelphia. And that was such a dramatic example to me of how a young person with big dreams and big hopes got off track, didn't see the value of school, found the marketplace of the streets far more interesting than school. And these stories of young people, most of whom could have made it, led us to solutions and answers. And in turn, it led us to the understanding that we needed to have a partner like public media. They came forward with the American Graduate Initiative to help communities and states, school districts understand all across the country what was at stake to the young people, to the communities, and to the economy in not addressing this problem. And it's made a big difference.
How did you arrive at the you, and I probably should say it's not just you as an individual, that this is a collective effort. There are a lot of people involved. But you, in a collective sense, arrive at the 90% target.
You know, interestingly, John, it was a goal set by three previous U.S. presidents, President George H.W. Bush in Williamsburg with 50 governors, President Clinton in the context of Goals 2000, President George W. Bush in the context of No Child Left Behind, all the same goal, 90% high school graduation rates by date certain. What we learned, though, was one, the data was bad. It was overestimating high school graduation rates at the federal level. And second, there wasn't a plan of action to meet it. So we brought together educators, policymakers like the National Governors Associations, and maybe most importantly, community-based organizations like Boys and Girls Club, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, City Year, United Way, to get more caring, loving adults, mentors, and tutors into the public schools. We also discovered, John, that 50% of the dropouts were just found in 15% of the schools in the United States, enabling a targeted, focused effort to boost these graduation rates in those very places that were losing the most students. And so there's this civic Marshall Plan that takes what evidence tells us works, from what works with on-track reading by third grade and nurse family partnerships to ninth grade academies in that critical transition year. And spreading those practices and ideas all across the country is having a good effect.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about graduation rates and what we can do to improve them here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. You said at the start here that the graduation rates, at least at the federal level, were overestimated. So it sounds like you had a job even before you began solving the problem of attempting to determine just how reliable the information you were getting. Two questions here. First, how did you go about trying to get the accurate information, and what is your confidence level in the information you're getting now?
Very good. So the original data included things like GEDs, which we know are not comparable in terms of market value to a regular high school diploma. It also looked at up to the age of 26, a young person's, whether they had graduated by the age of 26. What we wanted to do, because we know it matters so much to whether someone actually graduates and doesn't drop out, is to track on-time high school graduation rates. Encouragingly, all 50 governors in 2005 signed a compact saying that they were going to have the same common measurement of high school graduation rates. Those who started in ninth grade and those who graduated 4 years later, accounting for transfers in and transfers out of their school system, that's a more accurate measure. And it also acts as an incentive for more young people to stay on course and for the schools and districts who serve them to stay on course. We do have some concerns in some states around the country in variability of what constitutes a regular diploma. Some states view certificates of attendance or completion for certain subgroups and populations as equivalent to regular diplomas. We know that's not true. And so we call it the data cleanup crew. We're trying to work hard to ensure that states stick to the actual definition of what constitutes a regular diploma, because that's in the best interests of the young people.
What are some of the problem states when you talk about that?
Yeah, we worry.
You probably would resist the idea of defining them as problem states.
Right. We worry a little bit about Texas. Texas has extraordinarily high school graduation rates, including for minorities, low-income students, even students with disabilities, where there are huge gaps around the country. And we worry there about some of the data collection efforts and definitions around graduation rates. Encouragingly, in Indiana is one of two states, together with Kentucky, who not only has an 87% high school graduation rate, but an 81% graduation rate for low-income students. That's in the face of a national average of about 73% for most low-income students. And in 17 states in the country, low-income students are graduating literally in the 60 percentiles, or it's basically a 50-50 proposition whether someone from a low-income family is graduating compared to their middle and higher-income peers, which is, you know, really flies in the face of America's commitment to equality of opportunity.
Do you worry with this that, you know, one of the ways, obviously, to achieve higher graduation rates is just to make getting through high school a lot easier. That I would assume that there was a concern about dumbing down curricula and all of that. What have you done to make sure that isn't the solution in some states that just want to hit the targets?
I'm so glad you asked that, because we obviously, a high school diploma is a stepping stone. In this economy, three-quarters of the jobs in the future are going to require not just a high school diploma, but some kind of occupational certificate, a BA degree, associate's degree of some kind, so some post-secondary credential. And so the encouraging news is that the most accelerated gains in high school graduation rates have come from the school districts and states that have also have been rising to a standard of excellence. More dual enrollment of, you know, being in courses that give you credit in high school but also credit in college. More AP classes. Exit exams are on the rise, which, you know, I was in a school in Cleveland the other day where the graduation rate had been at about 90%. It was now down to about 85%. And I asked, you know, that's still very good, but what accounts for the slight decline? He said, well, we now have the exit exam. It's more rigorous for these young people to finish and what they have to know. And so the encouraging news is, in most places where school districts and states are increasing graduation rates, that increase has come in the very period where the standards have also been on the rise. Now we have the advent of the Common Core, and in places like Kentucky, that it was the first state to adopt it, we're seeing significant gains in math proficiency as a result of that increasing standard. So that's an encouraging sign.
As you're probably aware, Common Core has become kind of a hot button issue here, and you're probably beginning to regret you even mentioned it.
Right.
Here.
Yes.
Could you make the case in effect for Common Core? I think there are a lot of misperceptions about what it is and how it originated. I'm probably wildly oversimplifying here, but my understanding is it was a way of saying, okay, these are going to be a set of standards that everyone is going to be measured by, and we're going to keep it there for a while just so we can chart our progress.
So it's a question first of quality and equity. If you're in Akron or in Indianapolis or in Albuquerque, you ought to have the right to an equal education and standards that, so when you finish high school, you know you can get in to a college in your state. In fact, we found in our study that was just released that 25% of the schools in the United States serving low-income minority and students with disabilities were, in fact, not offering Algebra 2 or Chemistry, two courses that in most states are required to actually get into a 2- and 4-year college in that state. Indiana actually went beyond the Common Core and increased, particularly in math, some of its standards. So it's rising to a higher level of excellence than the Common Core you're seeing in other states.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about graduation rates. We're talking with the co-author of A New Grad Nation Report, John Bridgeland. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. You mentioned Indiana had pretty good overall graduation rates, 87%, although that still puts us 3 points below the target, right? And 81% minority graduation rates. How do we stack up with other parts of the nation?
So Indiana is doing extremely well with respect to educating and graduating low-income students. I know that it's had this outreach coordinator effort at the local level where it recognizes that schools can't do it alone. You need community-based organizations, United Way, Boys and Girls Clubs, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, providing the mentors and tutors, the after-school programs, the summer programs that so many young people need. Interestingly, Indiana has a large gap that's consistent with the national graduation gap for students with disabilities. So that's one area where Indiana is going to have to really focus some attention, is ensuring that the research shows 85% to 90% of students with disabilities could graduate with a regular diploma. They shouldn't be just given a certificate of attendance or completion. They ought to have the same high quality that other students have.
And in terms of where we are tracking over time, is that 87% been relatively constant, or have we seen growth over?
The good news is Indiana's had steady growth over the last decade in about the 70 percentiles up to 87%. So it's been not only one of the leaders in the country, but has been well above on pace to reach the graduation goal of 90%. Now let me, you know, we throw a lot of percentages around. This means 1.8 million more students graduated over the last decade rather than dropping out.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about graduation rates here on No Limits. My guest is John Bridgeland, co-author of the Grad Nation Report. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about graduation rates here in the state and in this country. As part of American Graduate, that's an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to leverage the power of public media to improve graduation rates. This station, WFYI, and this program have been part of that effort for several years. My guest is John Bridgeland, who is the co-author of the new Grad Nation Report. Just before the break, we were talking about how Indiana stacks up, and there's been progress there. In the report, I know that's not been the case everywhere, that there have been certain states where actually, instead of seeing gains, we have seen losses, or at least, you know, I was tempted to use the term static growth, but that seems mutually inconsistent.
Yeah.
So stasis, basically. Could you talk about those places and, you know, what has contributed to the lack of progress there?
So a third of the nation's school districts that educate the most students, they're of the top 500 school districts in the country with 15,000 students or more, K through 12, have actually been backsliding or making no ground in the last number of years. Many of these places are called dropout factory high schools. That's a harsh term, but you go into these places, they are climates of unsafety, of violence. Young people often feel don't feel comfortable doing their homework, staying in school. They're in very large class sizes. Sometimes their names are not known. Schools aren't tracking attendance patterns, who's in school and who is not in school on a particular day. You have students who are chronically absent and literally are suspended or expelled from school without any understanding or knowledge of who these people are and why they're acting out or why they're violating the dress code. In fact, in some schools, there's what's called a truancy to prison pipeline, which is an awful thing. And in our report, we ask for and challenge some of these schools to rethink their discipline policies so that discipline policies keep children in school, not kicking them out of school, and actually teach them valuable lessons about their behavior or the issues they need to address.
We are talking about graduation rates here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Brennan, welcome to the program.
I have a question to ask. It was only a few years back where Indiana's testing on the national exam was so poor that it was really lower than Mississippi. And here I've heard this great news that we have an 87% graduation rate, one of the best in the United States. So, you know, what's going on? How did this improvement happen so quickly?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Brennan.
So the progress actually has been over the last decade, and thank you for your good question. We've been seeing improvements in some areas, particularly math, progress and proficiency. You're right, though, in some national tests, norm tests, we're not seeing the progress in English and math and other subjects that we'd like to see. Having said that, individual schools and school districts in Indiana that have focused on the problem have understood who these students are, have gotten them the community wraparound supports that they need, the double dosing of math and reading and other supports with mentors and tutors and subjects has made a significant difference in the pockets and areas where there's been progress. To your point, though, in areas like the Indianapolis School District, in Gary Community School District, in certain schools in Hammond, the city of Hammond, we see frighteningly low graduation rates and challenges with respect, of course, to achievement in math, reading, and other subjects. So you highlight a very important issue. And just because the overall rate has improved and that's been driven by certain school districts and schools does not mean that there aren't pockets of serious difficulty in the state that still need to be addressed. Again, particularly with students with disabilities, with African-American students, the Indiana graduation rate is in the 70 percentile. Still much work to be done.
How is there a correlation between graduation rates and improving test scores or other standardized measures of educational achievement?
Yes, there often are in states between the NAEP test scores and increases in high school graduation rates. But those correlations need to be strengthened. And we also are just about to look at what's the relationship between. Because if someone graduates from high school and they're not prepared for post-secondary education, the remediation costs to society and to institutions and to the state, together with the lack of preparedness of that young person, means that that diploma doesn't have the value it ought to. So in addition to just graduating more students, we have to ensure that they're ready for college work, whether it's an occupational certificate, career and technical education, community college, or a four-year degree and beyond.
Got a question from a caller who doesn't want to go on the air. Said, asked if you think that opting out of I-STEP testing in Indiana will affect graduation rates.
You know, I don't know enough about the I-STEP testing. I will say this, that I think more information is better. And that in addition to increasing graduation rates, we have to be looking at how are the students performing on a variety of tests. I know that No Child Left Behind ushered in good things like disaggregated data by race, ethnicity, low income level, so we could actually see how different children from different backgrounds were doing on achievement toward this pipeline of graduation and on to college. At the same time, there's been far too much testing and a layering of testing. It's crowded out other things that are important for children to learn, including extracurricular activities and course offerings that schools can offer. But I think it's critical that we focus on quality and show relationships between high school graduation and test scores and the pathway to college.
I've gotten a comment via Facebook from a listener named Gary, and if you'd like to reach out to us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Gary's question is, as I look at economic inequalities, et cetera, he says he's not sure if the dropout epidemic is caused by a lack of incentive to complete high school as much as it is an awareness that the student might not be able to pay for any sort of education or training after high school. It's almost like a social contract question there, that if we follow the rules and go and do this, will there be some reward for us at the end?
It's a really good question. In fact, some of the schools that have been more innovative, I'll give you an example. In Tacoma, Washington, they had graduation rates of 60% or lower in the mid-2000s. They were literally on the list of dropout factory high schools. Their graduation rate is now near 80%. And one of the things that they did was to guarantee financial aid to 7th and 8th graders who were from low-income families or who were in the foster care system. And if they graduated from high school, they would pay for a 2- or 4-year college in the state of Washington. That acted as a huge incentive for so many low-income students to stick with it, to get not only what they needed to do to graduate high school, but to be prepared for college, dual enrollment, AP courses. It's had great success, and those students go on to be automatically accepted to 4-year colleges. So your question is a really good one, And we need to think more creatively about what are the incentives that will pull these students to and through high school and into college, because a lot of young people in high school fear that it's a dead end for them and they won't be able to afford college. When in fact, through the FAFSA application, there are financial aid is available to many low income students through Pell Grants and other means, and now states are innovating with this pull with financial support.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about graduation rates with the co-author of the new Grad Nation report, John Bridgeland. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881, as Alicia has done. Alicia, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I'm curious to know if these educators and Mr. Richland as well have given consideration or thought to trade-type training of these students that are not college-bound and are not actually interested in college, but who could be trained in order to be able to get out into some type of workforce, either mechanics, heating and air conditioning, and this type of training. And these are trades that are desperately needed in our society, where these children might be able to function much better than in just book learning and all these tests that seem to be administered to see at what level they are in order for them to proceed on to the college level. I know that at one time in Indiana we did have schools that did have trades available to the students, especially those that were not doing well grade-wise. I would be curious to receive an answer.
Thanks very much for the call. We'll try to get you an answer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Alicia, it's a wonderful question. Interestingly, America's sort of taken its eye off the ball with respect to career and technical education, vocational education. And the data of where the jobs are in the future is overwhelming, that there are millions and millions of jobs for which young people could get career and technical education, get an occupational certificate, and get into these jobs that pay significant wages. And so I think your idea is a very good one. And in fact, in many of the areas where we're seeing gains in high school graduation rates as a stepping stone to something beyond in college and then to a career, there are these career and technical academies that are being established. We're even seeing corporations who worry that they're not getting the skilled workforce that they need going into schools and being part of a 9th through 14 pipeline where they help educate young people, inform the curriculum, and then guarantee that they can be first in line for applying to a job with companies like IBM or welding companies, construction companies, engineering companies, other trades where America needs a skilled workforce. So you have a very, very good point, and I think it's important for not only Indiana but states around the country to reinvigorate career and technical education.
I've gotten a tweet from a listener named Stephanie. You can reach out to us via Twitter, at WFYI. What role does business play in addressing gaps in grad rates? What are the levers business people should pull?
Wonderful, wonderful question. So businesses in this Grad Nation campaign have actually been causing us to highlight the economic impact of dropping out in community by community. And in our report this year, we show that if high school graduation rates were increased to 90% in the state of Indiana, the gains to the state and gross state domestic product would be $48 million a year. That's not insignificant. Businesses are also mobilizing their workforce into the schools to be volunteers who mentor and tutor and talk to young people about how does taking Algebra 1 or chemistry or the social sciences actually translate into the kind of knowledge and skills and competencies you'll need to work in a company like ours so that young people see the relevance of their education. And finally, businesses, as I mentioned with IBM and others, are actually going into the schools, informing curriculum, and are so desperately in search of a skilled workforce that they're playing a role in educating young people and then creating real-life career opportunities at the end of that pipeline.
Is there a self-preservation argument that you can make with a lot of those businesses? I mean, most economists now are predicting that there will be a worldwide labor shortage, in about 15 years, by 2030. And the largest areas of shortage are going to be in skilled labor, highly skilled labor. The places that don't have it aren't likely to prosper.
John, you're exactly right. In fact, many of these companies have literally had to start universities where the people they're getting into their companies don't have not just sometimes the academic knowledge, but the social and emotional skills, the grit, the persistence, the collaborative problem solving, the ability to work in teams, the leadership skills. And so companies very much in their self-interest are increasingly looking at the K-16 pipeline to see what they can do. Organizations like the Business Roundtable, the Chambers of Commerce all across the country are playing a leading role in looking at what are the gaps in education and what we can do to close them.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about graduation rates here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Mitch, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I was a teacher in Indiana schools for 36 years. I taught in the middle school. And what I noticed a lot when my students would come back to visit me, I would find out that some kids had dropped out because they were trying to support their car, like to pay the insurance or to buy the car in the first place and that sort of thing. And I really think it might help if kids didn't get their driver's license until they graduated high school, except in extreme cases. There could be, you know, some kind of hardship cases where they need it. But otherwise, I think that would be an incentive to make them stay in school, and also they wouldn't have to work to support their car.
Such an interesting
thanks very much for the call
comment, and thank you for your many years of teaching in the public schools. What an extraordinary role to influence so many young people. In the state of Indiana, Tennessee, if you are a high school dropout, you cannot get your driver's license until you're 18. And the economic reason is that the insurance rates go wildly up because those who drop out of high school actually get in more accidents. And so there's an economic incentive for the state to say, you know what, if you didn't graduate high school and the data shows that that results in more risks to society and more costs, we're going to up the age to 18 before you can get that driver's license. So that's something that's actually happening in some states around the country.
Does Tennessee take the license away if for example, you've gotten your driver's license when you're 16 and several? I know it varies from state to state, whether it's 16 years and 1 month or whatever. If you've already gotten the license and then you drop out?
Yeah, they actually suspend your privileges. And it's a very strong incentive for a young person to stick with it and graduate from high school.
So in some ways, it sounds like the model here is that you earn the responsibility by staying in school.
That's right.
Are there other sort of creative solutions like that I mean, the point here is obviously you're trying to hit a young person where he or she lives.
Yes.
I suppose taking the cell phone away would be even more effective.
Right. I haven't seen that emerge yet, John, but maybe that is a creative idea. You know, one thing we noticed was these compulsory school attendance age laws were all drafted around the early part of the 20th century when we had an agrarian economy and in a manufacturing economy. And you didn't really even need a high school diploma to hold down a decent paying job. That whole equation has flipped. And so in the last decade, more than 12 states have raised their compulsory school attendance age to 18 from 16 or 17, recognizing that, young people have to not only graduate high school but go on to college, and two, it's the expectation that the state sends that we expect you to stay in school and finish.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about graduation rates here on No Limits. It's part of American Graduate, an initiative by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to improve graduation rates across the country by leveraging the power of public media. My guest is John Bridgeland. He is the co-author of the latest Grad Nation report. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about graduation rates as part of the American Graduate Initiative by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which aims to increase graduation rates here in the United States to a target, an impressive target of 90% by the year 2020. My guest is John Bridgeland, who's the co-author of the latest Grad Nation report. Just before we went to the break, we were talking about ways that we could create either incentives for students, depending upon your point of view, either incentives for students to stay in school or disincentives for them to drop out. Are there other, you know, in looking at the report, it struck me that, and I don't mean this as, in a derogatory fashion, that there was not, at least in terms of identifying the problems, anything particularly new in it. This has been a long-term struggle for this society and this culture, and that the places where we can see the most gains are, you know, with poor Americans, with minority students, with those who have disabilities of some kind, and those who are in urban and often, you know, poverty is an overarching theme here. Right. Where are the places we're making the inroads there? Because that's where most of the growth, it seems like, can occur.
Yeah, it's true. What is new in this report actually is the data around the graduation gaps for low-income students. That's brand new this year. Also, the focus on students with disabilities. You're right, in past years we've focused on progress and challenge with respect to African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, Native Americans, and other subgroups. What's encouraging is the Commonwealth of Kentucky adopted graduation rate accountability very early, more than a decade ago, made a commitment that principals and superintendents would be evaluated by the gains, not just of any student, but low-income students. In the little county of Floyd County, which is the county next to Martin County, where President Lyndon Johnson announced his war on poverty in 1965 on Tom Fletcher's front porch in Appalachia, Floyd County went from having one of the lowest performing schools in the entire Commonwealth to being in the top five. And they did it by inviting in community-based organizations, Save the Children and others, who could provide the kind of wraparound supports that students need. We also note 1.2 million young people in the United States are homeless and in the K-12 system. That's a remarkable fact. We have to do more to ensure that homelessness is destigmatized and that young people get the support and the housing stability and the community support that's so often missing in their lives.
What is the greatest driver of this problem? I mean, is it poverty? I mean, is it basically that poor communities struggle in part because of a resource question and in part because of the breakdown? We've talked a lot about how students tend to lose faith that there will be something in it at the end of the process.
Poverty is both a cause and a consequence of higher dropout rates. But, John, what's encouraging about what we found this year is there are 124 school districts in the United States that have 61% of the students in those schools are in poverty or low-income students. And yet they made gains that tripled the national average in terms of graduation rates. And in looking at the stories in Kentucky, another example is Washington County, Maryland. It has a 493-square-mile district, huge challenges in a rural area with pockets of poverty. Nonetheless, it got put in place early warning systems to identify the attendance patterns, behavior, course performance in reading and math, and mobilized more caring, loving adults into the schools, community-based organizations, summer programs, after-school programs. If you create that environment that says, I care about the child, and notwithstanding your poverty, you're going to have an opportunity to do well in school. And then, another creative solution is actually ensuring that if you graduate and meet the requirements of high school, you will automatically be admitted to a four-year college in that state. That's a very big incentive for young people to want to stay on track to graduate.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about graduation rates here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
You spoke earlier about Tennessee's linkage between driver's license and graduation. I haven't heard anything, and perhaps it would be illegal, but I haven't heard any conversation about a tiered minimum wage tied to graduation.
Good question. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Steve.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it either, Steve. But it's an interesting question. The state does have the ability to grant driver's licenses, and based on the economic impact that that dropouts have in terms of boosting insurance premiums and costs and risks to other drivers, they made the judgment that they wouldn't issue those licenses until 18. I don't see the same arguments with respect to the minimum wage. And in fact, young people who drop out earn $1 million less over their lifetimes compared to college graduates, and about $10,000 less than those who graduate from high school. So the best answer to boost your economic prospects, putting aside whether you have increases in the minimum wage or not. In fact, you could see that if you increase the minimum wage in a particular area or state and rewarded young people who were dropping out of high school, that could act as a disincentive for their long-term economic viability in an increasingly competitive 21st century marketplace.
Well, if I understand Steve's question, in some ways what you're saying here is that the market is already imposing the kind of penalties he's talking about.
That's exactly right.
That there is a higher minimum wage if you end up staying in high school, and a much higher minimum wage if you go to college. Got an email question from a listener named Gail. It says, how many students does Indiana need to graduate to hit the goal of 90%?
Wonderful question. And it's I actually have the number. It's 2,237 additional graduates from where we are in 2013, which is the latest available data, to reach the 90% goal. Nationally, it's three Rose Bowl stadiums. It's 310,000 additional graduates across the nation above and beyond where we are today. So if you look at that, you know, you think about a basketball stadium. If we could just fill up a basketball stadium with additional graduates around a little something over 2,000, we could hit the 90% goal. But of course, as David Adams in Shelbyville High School, which was originally featured on that Time cover story, Dropout Nation, says 90% is not sufficient. We should be shooting for 100%. All children ought to have the chance to graduate high school and move on to college and work.
And that anticipates, actually, once you hit the 90% goal, what comes after that? I mean, is it about trying to get to 100%, or is it trying to establish that the value of that high school degree that the 90% achieve is even greater?
You need both. I think having these goals in schools and districts and states and nationally has a way of sort of focusing attention on, you know, how many students will it take, where are we losing the most students, in which schools, what is it going to take to keep them on track to graduate. At the same time, we need, you know, the twin coils of progress. And that second coil is to ensure that these diplomas have as high a value, highest quality. And encouragingly, young people are so smart that, you know, they recognize that dual enrollment, early college, high school, taking more AP courses, all these things that connect high school to college, and we need to make more linkages between those systems, will lead to better outcomes for them, not only in graduating, not only getting into college and having success, but having more earning power in the workplace.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the ways we can improve graduation rates. My guest is John Bridgeland, who's the co-author of the new Grad Nation report. Don, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much. This conversation strikes a chord with me. I'm the owner of a heating, air conditioning, and plumbing company. And the earlier caller that made the comment about, you know, kids that can't make it into college, they're the ones that should be getting into the blue collar, if you will, labor force. I think what the schools need to do is make skilled trades in that area just as much of a high priority as as getting into these colleges. I mean, I've got five kids. Four of them have already gone to college. My fifth one's going to be a senior coming up. And, you know, the emphasis on these AP classes and, you know, get into the best college and things like that. Well, let me tell you, my guys here, you know, they make $60,000 to $80,000 a year. They're no slouches. You need very intelligent people. So the schools need to get a better job of saying, hey, there's an equal opportunity here to get into the highly skilled trades. It's getting more and more complicated. And treat that with the same level that you would of trying to get these kids into, you know, very elite colleges and taking all these AP courses. Just kind of throwing that out there for you guys.
Thanks very much for the call.
Don, take care. Don, I couldn't agree with you more. It's so interesting. A lot of kids who go to these elite colleges and universities often question why they're there and what's the path that they're on. And the trades have there's so many jobs in the country that are in search of young people with these credentials, the occupational certificates, the training that they need to be plumbers and welders and technicians of all kinds. And these are, you know, good paying jobs. I think I saw data showing that 28 million jobs in the coming years are going to be in the trades. And so we ought to offer, schools ought to offer more choice to young people to show them the multiple pathways they can take to a successful career. So I'm so glad you highlighted that. And I hope states and school districts will take up the career and technical education cause more seriously.
Well, that raises the question. I mean, when we're talking about states, including Indiana, are the ways that we measure educational success, I mean, most of them are directed. I'm probably arguing in my other life, obviously, as a college professor, I'm probably arguing against my own interest here.
Right.
But is too much of the focus on preparing students for college and to some degree postgraduate work?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are many purposes of education. I mean, one is obviously to lead to a career that enables you to have meaning in your career, to be able to raise and support a family. There are also, you know, purpose of education to, you know, lead a complete and happy life in the humanities and Shakespeare and the great thinkers and over time and what they teach us about life. Another aspect I want to mention we haven't talked about is that high school graduates have much higher rates of volunteering, voting, community project, participating in the civic lives of their communities. And when you look at places like Ferguson and Baltimore and the fraying that we're seeing around the country of lack of social trust, trust in institutions and one another, one of the fundamental purposes of education needs to be to train people from different backgrounds, beliefs, races, ethnicities, to work together in common purpose, not only to make our economy stronger, but our communities and our country better.
Gotten an email from a listener named Travis. Says Indy Reads helps over 1,500 adults learn to read each year. Very few of them graduated, not because they didn't want to, but because they could not. Many of them have learning disabilities, dyslexia, or other issues that made it hard for them to learn to read and impossible to graduate. Many of our students tell us that their schools knew they couldn't read but had no resources to help them on their reading in junior high or high school. If we could provide more resources to make sure these students could read, then we could greatly improve our graduation rates and reduce adult illiteracy.
You know, wonderfully said. I think that wonderful comment stands on its own, and I won't add too much to it other than to say students with disabilities are the most significant underserved population in the country. And not only in Indiana, which only 69% of students with disabilities graduate compared to 87% of other students and 90%+ of middle and upper income students, we need to focus a lot more attention on providing supports to students with all sorts of disabilities because the research is overwhelming that 85% to 90% of them could graduate with a regular diploma if they had the appropriate supports.
What is politically the most difficult part of solving this puzzle? Is it getting a lot of state legislatures to focus attention on you know, attempting to help schools that evidence would seem to suggest are underperforming, in part because they have significant challenges that other schools don't, at a time when, you know, we've sort of walked ourselves into the cul-de-sac of demanding accountability everywhere.
You know, I think actually paring away politics and following evidence, what's effective? You know, is school choice effective or not?
Mm-hmm.
What does the evidence tell us? What do randomized control trials tell us about that? What does evidence tell us about accountability? What does evidence tell us about individual programs that are working in the schools? I think if we follow the evidence, and the good news is we have reams of it, including in our report, we know what works in many cases. If we follow the evidence, parry away politics, I think we can make more progress in this country.
Well, what in the case of that evidence, what does work? For example, the school choice, does it work?
So interestingly, in randomized control trials, because they have a lottery system and they have an instant built-in, you know, ability to show what happens to students in those schools where they choose or get a voucher to go into a school compared to those who don't win the lottery. They've showed that in New York City, Dayton, and in Washington, D.C., there have been some gains for African-American students. But I will tell you that, you know, I know parents like choice. I, as a parent, like the idea of choice. But the evidence is not as strong as many think that school choice actually results in effective, high-quality schools. So I think we need to focus attention on high-quality schools, whether they're the traditional public schools, the private schools, the charter schools, and get away from the ideological debates about choice or no choice.
And in terms of the issues, you know, one of the X factors, I would think, when we're talking about school choice or any of these other things, is parental involvement. How important is that to this discussion?
So the evidence is overwhelming that an engaged parent, an involved parent, has a dramatic influence on the student's academic achievement, attendance at school, performance and persistence from grade to grade, graduation from high school, and attaching to the appropriate college institution to reflect that student's abilities. And the second biggest factor is the teacher in the school. So parents and teachers have to work effectively together.
We've got just about 10 seconds, but I would be remiss if I didn't point out this is not the last chance people are going to have to hear you in Indianapolis. You're talking tonight, right?
I am.
And could you give the details real quick?
You know, I should have the details. I'm at the library.
At the Central Library.
At the Central Library.
We're talking about graduation
rates. At
6:30. At 6:30 this evening.
That's it.
That's a good last word. Thank you for joining us. I'm John Kroll. And we will be back on Thursday. Thanks again for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.